Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Medication Madness, and now Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, it's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with guests unafraid to speak the truth about psychiatry and psychology and about how you can make the most of your own life.
And this is Peter Bregan. Hello out there. Listen, folks. I'm going to Tampa. Are you going to Tampa? I'm going to be in Tampa, Florida. Our center, the Center for the Study of Empathic Therapy, this weekend is holding a joint conference with the with the Florida Adlerian Society. My friends Tim and Jerry are putting together with their board and other folks a great conference along with me. I've selected a number of the folks coming. They've selected some on this Friday, not next Friday, not the Friday after, this coming Friday, a few days away. I fly out tomorrow on Thursday. I'll be emceeing a full day of marvelous presenters, folks who run schools free of psychiatric drugs, a judge who handles family court kinds of problems, while avoiding psychiatric entrapment for the folks who come to her for help, a judge who displays infinite caring and patience in an area in which people are often just dismissed and sent to marching off to worse circumstances than they began with. It's going to be a really good day. I'll start out the day at 9 a.m. You can Google us at... go to empathictherapy.org. You can find us, and you can Google the conference through the Adlerians as well. And it's just going to be a good time, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place. And we have a good turnout, but nothing would make me happier than to have a few people come up and shake my hand and say, I heard about this on your radio show, Peter. Here I am. I really would love that. I sure hope it happens. Today, I was reworking my website the last couple of days in light of thinking more about the satisfaction of some of the more important lawsuits that I've been involved in. So I've rearranged the front page of Bregan.com a little, so up in the right-hand side, there are five legal victories listed. I've had many more than that, but five that are really important, three of them recent. And it just gave me some satisfaction, because I can tell you, when you get down there in the courts and in the trenches, when there are lawyers trying to discredit you and humiliate you, and you're trying to keep a clear head so you can speak the truth, it's not easy. And just really proud of looking at it to see this recent, the Chicago $1.5 million verdict on behalf of an autistic child whose life was ruined by tardive dyskinesia from psychiatric drugs. And then before that, a wonderful man in Syracuse who committed suicide on psychiatric drugs. And again, there was a good verdict in the $1.5 million range. And before that, another one I'm really proud of, going back about 2.5 years now, the Canadian court case where a judge agreed with my testimony and not with the local psychiatric bigwig that a 16-year-old had indeed stabbed his best friend to death when he was freaked out on Prozac, and that it was a Prozac-induced example of violence. And then before that, going back to 2005, being the expert in the first ever electroshock case to be won in court in a malpractice trial. I've had settlements before, many settlements, and so have other people, but this is the first time they took us to court, took any of us to court, and we actually won. That was in 2005. And then 2002, I was the expert in the first ever, another first, victory against a psychosurgeon, a brain mutilator, for $7.5 million at the Cleveland Clinic, which is self-insured. I'm sure they weren't happy about that. So just feeling good about that. Sharing it with you, hoping to see you on the shores of sunny Tampa Bay at our joint empathic therapy and Florida Adlerian Society Conference. It's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Friday and Saturday are probably the most general public days. Thursday more about Adlerian workshops. Come on and see us. And also, I'm going to be doing a workshop on psychiatric drugs and withdrawing from them on Saturday, in addition to giving a plenary talk Friday morning. So there you are. Now, I have a wonderful guest. She's so wonderful, I invited her back for the second time. Some of you may have heard her before. She's going to be as good or better than ever. Her name is Mary Ann Copeland. Are you there, Mary Ann?
I'm Mary Ellen.
Mary Ellen. Why did I say Mary Ann?
Because a lot of people do. A lot of people do.
A lot of people do.
Yeah.
And because I'm recovering from the flu. You should have heard me last week on this.
Yeah, it was really bad, huh? I had the flu last week, too, and it was really bad. So,
Mary Ellen represents something that I think, folks, is so incredibly important, which is innovative ways for folks with a little guidance to help themselves overcome the enormous stresses and difficulties of life. Mary Ellen is has something she calls the Active Recovery Plan. Another name for her work is the WRAP program, W-R-A-P. The WRAP program actually has the endorsement, and I forgive her for this, of the federal government's
yeah.
social services program, and it'd be interesting to hear about that. So she's having an impact with this. And I asked her, she's a PhD, by the way, Mary Ellen Copeland, PhD. I asked her to just write me a couple of sentences, and one of them I really like, and I'm going to quote it. Her focus is on shifting the system of mental health care away from the use of psychotropic medications and harsh traumatizing treatments and toward personal empowerment, self-help, prevention and recovery through natural supports, education, training, and research. And she's developed a very, very interesting approach, which we'll talk about, and maybe start out in with more general ideas and principles, and certainly by the second half of the show, we'll be talking about the real specifics of a really interesting approach to helping people. Hello, Mary Ellen.
Hi.
You sound good and clear.
Good. Great.
Where would you like to begin today?
Well, as I was thinking about this today, and I spend a lot of time, I think, wishing that that when people started feeling uncomfortable, when they started noticing that they were more anxious, a little more agitated, a little more sad than they wanted to be, at the very beginning of that time, that they would look at that and say, this is something I can do something about, and then would take action early on, would take personal responsibility, and I find I have to do this myself all the time. When I find that I'm starting to, you know, notice I'm not sleeping very well, when I've got too much going on, when my I can't stop my mind from going around, I've found that I've developed a whole variety of strategies for backing myself down and off. In the past, 20 years ago, when I had those kinds of things going on, I just ended up getting worse and worse and worse. I'd go to the doctor. I'd get put on all kinds of psychotropic medications. I lived on those for a number of years until I realized how bad that was for me. And that's when I started looking at how people help themselves. And I realized I really wish that we started teaching kids when they were very young that when you don't feel well, there are lots and lots of things that you can do to help yourself feel better. Like some kids feel better when they're really coloring a lot, or they're playing with their trucks, or they're playing with their friends, or they're climbing on the jungle gym, or they're sitting surrounded by their stuffed toys. If kids could learn that those kinds of things early on, how to help themselves feel better, I think we could bypass the system. And a lot of what I think about is bypassing the system and using our own, all of the creativity that we have as human beings to help ourselves feel better and move on with our lives. And I think we got stuck kind of in this thing that, well, if you don't feel good, then you need to take a pill and you need to reach out to the system. And if it gets bad enough, then they put you in the hospital and that means that you're mentally ill. And I just don't buy any of that. And we could back way off from that. I know in my own mother's case, she spent 8 years in a psychiatric hospital, you know, the whole time I was growing up, she was in a hospital. And as I look at that now, I just wish that somebody had, you know, she had five little kids. Somebody had said, you know, you need a vacation. We'll watch the kids for you, and you go away for a week and or whatever it takes, 2 weeks. I would have a lot rather my mother had been on a vacation for a few weeks than have her gone for 8 years. And somebody could have helped her with the cooking, and she could have gotten out more, and somebody could have helped take care of the kids, and she could have maybe pursued her interest in art and pursued her interest in nutrition. And that would have saved her from those lost 8 years. She had 150 electric shock treatments, and she lost a lot of her memory. And while she got well when she figured it out for herself. She figured out, you know, I need to eat right and I need to have lots of support, and she worked that into her life. She worked her way out of the state hospital because she started setting up support groups, and they discharged her because they didn't like that very much. And she got well and went on and had a good and successful life, but she lost 8 really important years and a lot of memory. I know that wasn't necessary, and I found out for myself from learning from lots of other people how to do it that I can back myself off, and I do it all the time, and I know lots and lots and lots of people who do it. They start feeling worse and they back themselves back to feeling better, even when things are really tough. So that's long answer.
No, that wasn't a long answer. That was a perfect answer.
Thanks.
I think that, first of all, I think every successful human being, two thoughts about what you were saying. Every successful human being, all of us, have ways of lifting ourselves up.
Right.
Sort of by the bootstraps.
Right.
When we're down.
Yep.
Before Ginger, you know, I divide my life into BG and, maybe WG, before Ginger and with Ginger. And before Ginger, I used to say if I could just drag myself to the typewriter, because those were typewriter days, if I could drag myself to the typewriter, I would be okay, because I knew that once I was exercising my mind and doing something that I always loved to do, which is writing, that everything would be okay.
Right.
And I think we all need to look at our resources, and this is something you just know a huge amount about, and we're going to talk about in more detail. And the other part of what you were saying about if your mother had a 2 weeks vacation, somebody to come in and help with the kids, we would do so much more good for human beings.
Right.
We would save so much money.
Right.
We would prevent
so many
hospitalizations and incarcerations in jail, mm-hmm. if we spend some of our money on these programs to go into the families and just make family life a little more rational for a while.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, my daughter-in-law has 6 children, and 3 of them have a very serious genetic disorder. And just a month ago, she was really feeling sad a lot of the time and having a hard time getting out of bed and doing anything at all. And her sister invited her to Florida for the week. And my first thought was, how can she go to Florida when she's got all these kids sick? And then I thought the best thing in the world for her is to go to Florida for a week and find other resources to help out with the kiddos. And, she, you know, she came back and she still has a lot to face, but she's a whole lot better. And Just if only it had been different for my mother, and actually for my daughter-in-law's mother, who was so overwhelmed when her kids were growing up that she ended her life. She ended her life when my daughter-in-law was 9. And so learning different ways. So a trip to Florida for 4 days, I think it was more like 7 days, made a huge difference for her. She got some sun, it was warm, she got out of this dark, cold Vermont winter, things like that, to make them available to people. And they don't even have to be as expensive as a trip to Florida, but there's many, many things in our communities that we have that we can use. We have not far from us a place where it sort of simulates Florida. It's a butterfly house. And you can go there and you can have like an afternoon in the sun. And we often go to the butterfly house to just give us a break from the winter. And it's just what I call wellness tools. There's all kinds of them. And if we start looking for them, we'll find them everywhere. We'll find them in the butterfly house. We'll find them in the museum in our towns. We'll find them in the library. We'll find them with particular friends. For 3 days a week, I go to an exercise class at the senior center, which probably sounds grim to most people, and yet we have so much fun together. I don't know if we get too much out of the exercise. It doesn't really matter because we talk and laugh and joke, and when I leave there, I feel good, and some of these people have become my good friends. And these are all the wellness things that people can use, and mostly they can be free, they can be or very inexpensive, and just keep us out of having to do things to ourselves, invasive things, expensive things, harmful things, that can cause such havoc in our lives. It almost ruined my life, for sure.
Say a few more words about the butterfly house. I'm sure some of our listeners are like me, are saying, the butterfly house, what is that?
It's almost like a gym, but a big gymnasium. It's got the ceilings are all light. There's some kind of plastic that lets all the light come in. So it's very, very light, and it's very warm and kind of humid, and there's lots of tropical plants, and they have a system for propagating butterflies, and there's all kinds of beautiful butterflies and some birds in there. And so you go in there and you can just sit. There's benches all around, and it's beautiful. There's flowers, and the butterflies will land on you, and then they'll fly off. There's many, many, many butterflies in this butterfly house, and it's, you know, how much better to go to the butterfly house than to go to a mental hospital?
And who runs the butterfly house?
I think it's a private business, but I think in other places there are.
Do you pay some money to go in?
I think it was $3 or $4, and I think sometimes universities have them as part of their research. I don't know if they do any research at the one that I go to. I know they do some propagation, It's a delightful place, and I think if you look for them, we've seen them in other parts of the country. We were in Asheville, North Carolina, but various places I've seen them. I think it was in Asheville, but various places I've seen butterfly houses. And so we need to look for those things. What's around us that, you know, this is just a few minutes' drive, and we can be, to go from our, you know, we've had a horrible, icy, deep snow kind of winter here in Vermont, lots of wind, lots of cold, and to just go to the butterfly house and spend even half a day or a whole day, you can just sit in there, you can rest, you can stay for as long as you want, and there's a nice little place where you can buy a sandwich and a cup of tea, and that's outside of the butterfly house, and you can go back and forth, in and out, and very exceptional. And, you know, so much better than going to the hospital.
Absolutely better than going to the hospital.
Right.
You know, the programs, the things you were describing where you intervene in the family, a lot of people don't know that we've had what's called wraparound programs, very different than your WRAP programs, wholly different acronym. But we have wraparound programs all over this country, including Alaska, in decades past, where
instead of incarcerating children, which would cost a fortune, and often in another state that happens to have a place to incarcerate them, you know, they would go into the homes and just provide what was needed to the family, whether it was a vacation, whether it was somebody to come in and babysit, whether it was help getting a job, whether it was parenting. That's always so key. Parenting training, parenting skills. But with the whole, you know, drug everything to death,
yes.
I think these programs, in fact, instead of increasing, are getting smaller in number, is my guess. I don't know.
That's frightening. The drugging of our children is horrific. It's a horrible, horrible thing that we're doing to our next generation. I have grandsons in school, and there is heavy. These are just regular boys. They're just a 9-year-old, an 11-year-old. They're regular kids. They just wonderful, happy-go-lucky, fun kids. And there has been pressure on the parents of both of those kids that, you know, we think a medication would be helpful. And it boggles my mind. In fact, they tried one of the kids on a medication for a week, and he behaved. I was so glad that the reaction was so awful that they quickly removed him from the drug. But the pressure to just on a couple of regular, happy, developing boys to put them on drugs was just very, very upsetting to me.
Yeah, and we've talked about this on my show. I've had a couple of people who are really devoted to this issue. We're especially crushing our boys. It's like we want to wipe out any distinction between how boys tend to behave and how girls tend to behave.
Right.
And we're doing it not by empowering girls to run around and be more aggressive, but by crushing those tendencies in boys. It's really a tragedy.
It feels like we want to crush their spirits, that they have all this creativity and this energy, and it seems like they just want to knock that down. And so many parents don't have the kind of chutzpah that my particular sons and their families did to just say, no, we're not going this route. This is not a good idea. We're not going to do it. But a lot of parents have told me that they're under a lot of pressure from the schools to medicate and drug their kids. And instead, we should be, on one hand, allowing these kids to be kids, which they are, and on the other hand, too, showing them some skills and things to get through difficult times so they don't feel worse and worse and worse. And so in one of my grandson's cases, they found that he did a lot better in school if he was allowed to doodle while the teacher was talking, if he was allowed to doodle, and that there were particular times in class when it would be important for him to be able to go and take a 5-minute walk down the hall. And simple things like that that worked well for him. This whole skipping over this whole awful, awful medication thing, we have some very good idea what this does to kids for the long run, what the prognosis is going to be down the road, and the fact that it's happening is sickening to me.
Yeah, there's more and more data coming out now. At some point, Ginger and I are going to really make a point about this, but the data that's coming out more and more is that the children who were diagnosed with ADHD 30 years ago and put on Ritalin at the time are just much worse off than other children, much worse off.
When you say much worse off, as adults, they're much worse off?
As adults. Higher rates of incarceration, higher rates of mental hospitalization, higher rates of drug abuse, lower incomes, lower educational achievement. And these children were, in fact, pretty ordinary kids when they were put on Ritalin way back when.
Absolutely. I grieve for these lost lives. I really grieve. It's very, very, very troubling to me. And I wish I could find more time and energy to oppose it. It's very frustrating to me. I do what I can, and yet we need lots and lots and lots of people to be standing up and saying, this is not okay, this is really bad, and coming up with other ways that these kinds of issues should be dealt with, but setting up schools so that they would be okay for the kids that go there, that they should be kid places, not set up to meet the needs of the adults, and so that our kids can be successful there. But there's so much work to do, and I just wish I was a powerhouse of energy that could do all these things. So I encourage other people, though, to join in and do whatever it is you can, and to counteract this, to counteract what's going on.
One of the presenters in Florida are going to be the principals of an Adlerian-oriented school. Adler was the one great psychologist who was really caring and socially oriented back in the time of Freud, Adler, and Jung.
Uh-huh.
And the principals of the school are going to talk about their Adlerian elementary school in which none of the kids are drugged and none of them diagnosed. So we do have these examples out there, but God, we're running up against, obviously, the billion-dollar industry.
Right.
Multi-billions. I like so much your emphasis on people doing it themselves, because I do think that the only way this world is going to change in regard to psychiatry is when people just say, no, we're not going. We're not interested in that. We're looking for something else. Thank you. We don't want your drugs. We don't want your diagnoses. We want something positive that's actually going to make us feel better, live better, and take more charge of our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people really, really do need to take charge of their lives. And that's been really the focus of the Wellness Recovery Action Plan that I was working with a group, and they saw the need for this kind of organizational system to get back control of their lives. They were people who had been taking medications for years. They had all kinds of difficulties in their lives, and they said, we need something, and they came up with that. Lots of times people say, Mary Ellen Copeland came up with RAP, and I didn't. I didn't at all. It was this group of 30 people who really put all their energy. It was tough for them because they were having all kinds of things going on. They were really just having a very lot of difficulties, and they spent a lot of time. We worked together, and they came up with it, and I've had the privilege of sharing it with people around the world. And
well, when we come back from the break, we're not quite going to break yet, but when we come back from the break, Mary Ellen Copeland is going to tell you exactly what this RAP program is, how it got started, and how it can benefit you, because I think anybody can just tune into your websites and start benefiting. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And we are finding now that RAP is used way outside of the whole mental health system, but they're using it for diabetes management, people are using it for aging, people who just want to keep their lives in order, people for who are incarcerated and are developing a RAP and using it to manage that. People who want to lose weight, they're calling it RAP for Whole Health. And I'm just finishing up a book that will go into using RAP for Whole Health in a lot more detail, including suicide prevention. Suicide is a horrible problem that many, many people get far too discouraged. And they end their lives by suicide. And using RAP as a preventive, so that you never get to that place, and we're actually have some interest in that from people who run organizations. Suicide prevention organizations are saying we're having no success in dropping the suicide rate, and so now they're looking to RAP as a way to do that. And
we'll go to break now, and when you come back, folks, you're going to hear about a program that you can learn, that you can teach, that you can apply to yourself, that you can help your children with, that you can help your organization with. It's a really good, healthy approach to self-empowerment, and I look forward to when you get back, we're going to just dive right into that. And this is Dr. Peter Bregan, back with Mary Ellen Copeland, my marvelous guest, marvelous person.
Now, listen, everybody's talking about rating on iTunes. I've never before said on this radio show, please go and rate me on iTunes. But if everybody else is getting rated on iTunes and I'm not, people will think you don't care. So I guess as of today, I have to periodically say, please, 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 rate me on iTunes. Do it. Do it. Hi, Mary Ellen. Welcome back.
Thanks. Who would have thought years ago that we'd be being rated on iTunes? I sometimes think about where we are. We're in a different place than when I started this work. With all of the electronics, it's really amazing.
Yeah, well, whoever thought? I never thought I'd have a radio show.
Right, a radio show that has the capacity to go all around the world.
All over the world, that's right. It's
amazing.
Just marvelous.
Yep.
We're doing really good on our internet stuff. You know, my professional Facebook page is over 12,000 now,
oh,
Mary Ellen. And,
wow, that's wonderful.
And our newsletter, folks, which is free, just go to Bregan.com and or empathictherapy.org, and newsletter's free. We have over 5,000 subscribers, and really good people write for it. My wife Ginger runs it and edits it, and we have really, really top people in the mental health field writing for the newsletter about the latest things they're doing and thinking. So come join us electronically, world, and rate me on iTunes.
That's
Mary
great.
Ellen, talk about rap.
Okay, well, I said a little bit about how it was developed, and it's really important to me that people know that it was developed by people who really were in the midst of the worst of it, that they had been taking psychiatric meds, they had been were in all kinds of treatment programs. They were.
How were you working with them? You had a group. Were you working professionally?
The state of Vermont hired me. They knew about my research. I did a body of research to find out how people who have mental health challenges, how they cope with those mental health challenges, how they get well, and how they stay well. And so I did this body of research, and people sort of thought it was kind of primitive and didn't pay much attention, but I wrote a book, the Depression Workbook, and it was put out by a major publisher. It's still out. And after that, they paid more attention to me, and first the state of New Hampshire and then the state of Vermont hired me to go into regions of the states and work for 8 days with a group of people, teaching them these things that I had learned. And so I spent 8 days working with this group, teaching them what I had learned. And a woman stood up at the end and said, you know, this is all really good stuff, and I can see how it would be helpful, but I have been in mental hospitals all over the country. I've just been drifting all over the country, and then I end up in a psychiatric hospital for a while, and then I get out, and then I go another place, and the same thing happens. And I wouldn't have any idea how to incorporate what you're saying into my life. And so we all heard that. It was a really strong and powerful message, and we decided that we were going to, the program was over, we decided we would keep coming back until we figured that piece out. And all of these people for whom it was difficult to get there, who were, some people had to have somebody with them, a care provider with them, they'd have to go in and out, they'd have to go out to smoke, they'd have to just go out to get rid of their agitation at being in a group, some people who had very limited verbal skills, and we worked on this. This was work that we did, and it was hard work, and we came up with what we decided was the best method and for organizing this so people could really use it. And after we came up with it, you know, I was still having my fair share of having to deal with these issues. So I took it home and I developed a wellness recovery action plan for myself. And I immediately saw that it was how much easier it was for me. It was like a big, big step for me forward. And it continues to be. I use it all the time. And so I went to a conference, and it was a little daunting. It was the International Depressive and Manic Depressive Association Conference, which is a, and they, And we got there, and I went into various workshops, and they were showing pictures of brain slides, and they were telling about all these chemical formulas and how they affected the brain and how these people had all these brain problems. And I wasn't sure how it would be accepted, but when I gave, I decided, what the heck, I have nothing to lose here, and I presented RAP, and people were thrilled. They absolutely loved it. And so that was the beginning, and after that, that's all people wanted me to talk about. They wanted me to teach it. We've grown it into a whole training program. We found that the best way for people to learn this is in groups, and so but people can do it. You can do it on your own. You can do it with somebody else helping you, but we found that the way people really learn it best is in groups because people get so many ideas from each other. So we've really developed a strong group model and have trainings for facilitators.
Now tell people, give my listeners a real sense of what this is.
Okay.
What do people end up with and how do they use it?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what it is. And there's nothing that's rocket science about it. It's easy. And the first thing that those people up there said is we need to make a list of what we're like when we feel good. And some people said, you know, I don't know if I've ever felt good. But they said, well, what I'd like to feel like when I feel good. So that's the first thing is what I'm like when I'm well. And then, let me step back one step before that. Before that, we spend a long time with people in the groups or in the working with the workbook, whatever they've got. We've got lots of workbook. We've got books for kids. We've got books for youth. We've got books for veterans. We spend a lot of time just looking at what are all the things that you do that help you feel better. It may be as simple as combing your hair or brushing your teeth, or it may be taking a course at a college. It may be listening to your favorite music. It may be playing with a grandchild. It may be making a piece of art. And when people started thinking about this, they came up with long lists. I have a personal list of over 100 things that I can choose from that help me to feel better. And that's a long list. And then we take that list and use it to build our RAP plan. So we call that our wellness toolbox. And so the first piece, though, people said you have to write down what you're like when you're well. So we did that. Sometimes people want to put in their picture and things, but so that they have a reference point to go back to.
So as a part, then, of when you start to feel you're losing it, losing your grip, your control, your emotional well-being, you one of the first things you do then is, well, what am I like when I'm not this way? What am I like when
right.
I'm better?
Right, right. And it's part
that's
of the
like an inspiration.
Yeah, it's right. What am I like when I'm well, and or what would I like to be like if I don't really remember what that was like? And then the first part of the plan is, what are the things of all those wellness tools, all those things that I help me feel better, which ones I need just a short list, what are the ones I need to do every single day without fail? These are the ones I have to do. And it might be eat 3 meals, it might be eat breakfast, it might be take a shower, depending on who the person is. It might be spend a half an hour with my spouse, take a half an hour walk. We each have to figure out what that is for ourselves. What do I need to do every day? I think everybody would benefit by having such a list. What are the key things? I need to spend a little time with my dog because she doesn't like it, and I don't like it if I don't spend time with my dog. I like to have a call with a family member. Those things are on my list, and it should be a short list because we want to be sure we can do it every day. And then the next part of that beginning piece, which we call the daily maintenance plan, is we have a checklist. What are the things I might need to do on any given day? I don't need to do it every day, but do I need to get groceries? Do I need to pay some bills? Do I need to call my mother-in-law? What are the things, do I need to make an appointment with a care provider? Do I need to make an appointment with the Veterans Administration? What might I need to do? So just a list of reminders. Do I need to clean the house? Do I need to wash the dishes? Things I don't necessarily need to do every day but might need to do. So that's the first part, and it's quite easy to do. And then the next section is called triggers. And in the groups, it really works well because people think of all those things that if they happened would be upsetting and might be the beginning of kind of going downward or feeling much worse. Like if there was an automobile accident or somebody bullied you or somebody was mean to you or ignored you or it was the anniversary date of something bad that happened or somebody that you really care about is sick, what are those things that we can't really do anything about because they happen to all of us? And to make a list of those. And then they said, now we need to look in our wellness toolbox and we need to have a lot of choices and we need to see which of those wellness tools we could put on a list. And then if any of these things happen, we're going to use the ones of those which would work the best at that moment. So it could be, okay, I've seen an accident. I take a few deep breaths. I go home and I play the piano for half an hour. I watch a favorite video on TV. I tell my friend about it. Making a whole plan of what you're going to do so that instead of feeling worse, you feel you get yourself to feeling better as quickly as you can. So that's, you got your daily maintenance, and then you've got your triggers and your action plan. The next section then is early warning signs. What are those things that you feel in your body and you don't really know where they come from, and yet you know you're not feeling very good? And some of the things for me were like, I noticed that I wasn't buckling my seatbelt anymore, and I was not looking both ways when I crossed the street. We live in a small town, so it's not as serious as it might sound. But I noticed I wasn't bothering to look, and sometimes people were grabbing me by the coat and pulling me back. I noticed I had I'd have a little bit of a headache, and I'd have a funny feeling in my chest, and I'd be avoiding people. And I didn't really know why. And so I made a list, and that was the next section is early warning signs, making a list of those. And when people start talking about them in the groups, they learn from each other what their early warning signs they remember, and they say, oh, yeah, that's one of mine. And so they make this list, and then they go back to their wellness toolbox, and they make a more direct plan. If this happens, I am going to, and it might be take a mental health day. I'm going to spend at least 2 hours working on a quilt that I'm making. I'm going to ask my husband to do the cooking today so that I don't have to worry about that. I'm going to call my best friend Susan, and we're going to talk for half an hour and maybe split up the time. I'm going to be sure I get to go for a good walk. Maybe I'm going to take a hot bath if that's something that works for me. So people come up with a very direct plan of what they're going to do when they have these early warning signs. And often, for me, a lot of times that's all it takes is to back me up so that I'm feeling good again. But then we've got, first you develop the wellness toolbox, then you do your daily maintenance, then you do your triggers, then you do your early warning signs, and the next section then is when things are breaking down, and no matter how much we try, sometimes things get really bad, and we find that we're crying all the time and that we're having really lots of negative thinking, and we're maybe yelling at people in our household, and we just don't feel like eating, or we're eating everything in sight. Whatever it is for us, that means that we are just having a really rough time. And people said in the group said, whoa, this is the time that I usually call the crisis center, and they come and get me, and they put me in the hospital, and they feed me more medications, and it doesn't work. And people said, you know, we think if we used enough wellness tools and we worked this right and we had a really strong plan and we really did this, that we don't have to call the crisis unit and we don't have to go to the hospital. We can pull ourselves out of this ourselves. And that's what they found, and that's what the research has even found, is that when people got to that place, they didn't need to reach out for services and things. They could do it themselves. And so they made a list of what were all the signs that things were breaking down, and they came up with these names, when things are breaking down. And then they made a really strong plan. When I am like this, I need to take at least 3 days off from work. And these are just examples. I need to take at least 3 days off from work. I need to have somebody else do all the cooking for me, and these are the kinds of things I like. One woman said, if only somebody would make me macaroni and cheese, I'd feel a whole lot better. And how simple. Somebody else said brownies would do it for me. Great. anything that would help you feel better, but lots, but a very sort of directed, structured plan at this point that, you know, I'm going to watch my favorite TV show from 7:30 to 8, and then I'm going to have a visit with my daughter, who's really helpful. Just a really, I'm going to play my piano for at least a half an hour, and I'm going to do some of the artwork that I enjoy so much. And maybe I'm going to get somebody to take me out to eat to a favorite restaurant, whatever it is, that at that point, instead of reaching for some medication, some intensive treatment, going to the hospital, that we do all these things to take care of ourselves. And I find that when I do that, and it doesn't happen very much anymore, but when I do that, I just get to feeling better. And sometimes it takes a little time, and sometimes it happens quickly. But for me, it's a whole lot better than going to the hospital, getting more medication, getting an injection, having somebody tell me what to do or what not to do when I know myself what to do. So that's the it's the wellness toolbox, and then the daily maintenance, early warning signs, triggers, and when things are breaking down. And then there's a whole crisis plan, which is a plan that the person develops themselves, that they give to other people, that tells them exactly when they need others to interfere, like if they're unconscious, if they can't stop moving and they've been moving for hours and hours, they're hurting other people. What are the signs that say, I want somebody else to step in for me? And then it's a complete description of what you want them to do and what they should not do, including treatments and hospitals and all of that, that it's all there in a very clear document that focuses on recovery and using self-help non-invasive methods, tells supporters what to do. And then there's another section that people use if they get into a crisis situation, that a series of questions that guides them back to using their daily maintenance plan again. So that's the very basis of RAP, and there's so many resources. You can go online at www.mentalhealthrecovery.com, and there's a store on there, and there's all kinds of resources. There's books that tell in depth, that give ideas for developing RAP, and there's simple books for kids. There's computer programs, there's videos. We've tried to make it available in every way that we could. You can do it online if you want. There are all kinds of ways so that to make it accessible. One of the most recent things that we developed, working with a group of people in Philadelphia who have they call it developmental distinctions. They learn differently, and sometimes learning has been very difficult for them. And they had a RAP group, and they said, we really want to share what we've learned about RAP with other people who have similar issues to ours. And so they worked with Gina Calhoun, one of our trainers, and myself, and together with this group of people, we developed RAP for developmental distinctions. And that's a very wonderful way to work through the RAP process. So we've tried to make it as accessible as we could, as inexpensive or free. There's no reason it has to cost anything if people don't have the resources, but it can help a whole lot to have something to go with it. So that's what RAP is, and it's been studied intensively at the University of Illinois at Chicago and several other places, and they've proved, you know, this really works. People get better, stay better, they have hope, they empowered. It really works for people, so much so that even the federal government and their registry of evidence-based practices has listed it as evidence-based, which helps. Sometimes I'm concerned about having that distinction, but it helps make it accessible to lots and lots and lots more people. Lots of agencies then can hire trainers to come in and teach it, and they can buy lots of books and things, and so that's a really good thing about that. So that's RAP.
Now, are many of the people that this developed with probably were fairly isolated, I would think? And I'm not hearing a lot about how families or couples would use it. So could you comment on that?
We encourage families to develop a family RAP and couples to develop a couples RAP. We have a book called Wrap for Families, which is basically tells people, gives guidance that they can use. You can do it any way you want. It's your plan, and it's up to you. But it gives guidance on how to do it in the family and lots of examples of how you can use it in the family. If a family is using it, sometimes it makes it a lot easier than for individuals within the family to develop their own. And another thing is that if you bring home a rap book and say to your brother who's been having lots of trouble, you know, you should develop a rap plan, he's not apt to do it. But if you say, I'm developing this rap plan and I'm using it and thought you might be interested in it, they're a lot more likely to do it, to want to go through this process. Mm. And some people, for some people, it's just they don't even write the plan. They don't even think about the parts of it so much as it is saying to them, there are lots of things you can do to help yourself. It's changing a way of thinking. One man said to me, if only somebody had told me 20 years ago that there were things I could do to help myself. Nobody is saying to people that there are things they can do to help themselves. And that's what this is about.
This is so key. This is so key.
Yeah.
Now, did I introduce you to Mother Bear Can? I think you are involved with them.
Yes, I know Mother Bear Can. Yes, yes.
Did I introduce you? Or did you find your own way there?
I can't remember.
I can't remember.
You might have introduced me, but I certainly know them.
Now, Mother Bear Can, it's Mother Bear and then capital C-A-N. You can look up them at on the website.
Yep.
On the Google them. And they're going to be at our conference in Florida.
That's great.
Folks. So tell us about what you, Mother Bear Can, by the way, is in a sense our answer to NAMI, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, which is an AstroTurf group supported by the drug companies.
Right.
And the government and all the bad guys.
Yep.
That pretends to be supportive of people labeled mentally ill, but is actually, I think, a control freak group sponsored by the government and the drug companies.
Right,
and
right.
Mother Bear Can is the opposite. It's a family group that's online training families how to improve their lives and when they have an injured offspring, you know, how to work with their family member rather than how to diagnose and drug their family member.
Right, and they've been very interested in RAP and using RAP, and we've talked a lot about it. We've been in consultation and very, very, very good people. It's certainly an organization that I support.
Have they actually put some of your stuff into their training now, into their educational programs?
I'd have to check with them. You know, I'm more out of the loop on that sort of thing than I used to be. One of the things that was really important to me many years ago was just seeing that this was going beyond myself and pulling other people in to do pieces of it. And so there's pieces that I don't know as much about as other people in the organization do, and that's one of them. There are organizations like Mother Bear Can everywhere and that are using RAP, and we talked a lot about them using RAP, so I would assume that's happening, but I can't give a definite answer because I'm not the person in that role anymore. So I don't have all the knowledge anymore.
Well, that's marvelous to be in that position where you have other folks taking responsibilities. And
right. I didn't want it to end when I could no longer work. I wanted it to go on and on and on and on,
yeah.
And I can see that that can happen, and that feels good to me.
We're coming to an end with Mary Ellen Copeland. You'll find her easily on the web, her RAP program, one of those programs that someday people will be turning to in such great numbers that nobody goes for diagnoses and drugs.
Great. Let's make that happen right now.
Thank you much for listening. Maybe see you in Florida, if not next week on the radio.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Ellen.